You're listening to the Fantrax Radio Network. Fantasy sports lives here.
Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
It's hard to return a monkey these days.
I'm going to have to do some more research on this to see exactly what these zombie raccoons are doing.
What good was the snow guy?
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Y'all don't understand. I never seen so many Dominican women with cinnamon tans.
You're Macaulay Culkin, and you're just running around your house.
Don't tweet me if you drink the strawby. No strawby.
Zardoz.
Well, speaking of garbage, it's the Nasty Cast. All right, welcome into episode 160 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Nathan Dock, and you can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dock. Joined this week by a very gimpy Van Lee.
That's right. I'm back to having one leg again, which is generally the story of my life. It seems like this happens every other year, but my clumsiness, I mean, I was saving a baby from a fire, and a ninja assaulted me, an evil ninja, and I fought him away and saved that baby as well as all the dogs in the world. That's what happened.
I have no dispute to that at all. We also have with us today Ron Rigney. You know him from YoMTV Raps. What's up, Ron?
What up, player?
No, I didn't do anything that cool. I didn't save any babies today or encounter any ninjas.
Yeah, but you survived a day in Florida. I mean, that's worth in and of itself a lot.
That's a harrowing tale.
Yeah, it is. It is like it is some days kind of like a battlefield down here. You really have to be on your toes and you know, have your survival instincts very acute and ready to go. So that's why I drink so much caffeine, because I need to be able to make it through.
They say love is a battlefield.
Do they?
That's what they say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've heard that a couple times. Yeah.
I have no idea who said that. Was it Cindy Lauper?
Pat Benatar.
I
want it to be.
Pat Benatar.
Ah, yes. Okay. Wow, I was the only one that didn't know that.
Bat we are strong. Benatar.
No one can tell us we're wrong.
Pat Benatar.
Indeed.
Yes.
Other Pat Benatar song. I don't have it anymore.
That's all there is.
I love rock and roll. Is that her?
Nope. That song doesn't exist. She's a one-hit wonder.
Okay, good to know.
What's your favorite Pat Benatar song? Tweet us at NastyCastPod.
Of all the absurd segues you've had, that may be my favorite one.
That's good. That could break Twitter easily.
There are weirder ones out there, but that one just strikes a chord with me.
Well, you love Pat Benatar so much.
Apparently.
You could also tweet Van at Manly Van Lee, and Ron is at The Real Mod A. You can also email the show if you're not on Twitter, nastytraxpods@gmail.com. That's Trax, T-R-A-X. And if you would like to support the show, if you like us, you can leave us a rating review on iTunes or wherever you listen to us. You can also go to Patreon and donate at patreon.com/nastypod. And that will gain you access to our illustrious Slack channel where we BS all the time. And we'll also get some cool stuff in the mail to use shortly. And if anybody has not received access to the Slack channel, just like hit me up either the email or on Twitter and let me know that you didn't get the invitation. So just cover my bases on that. Also listen to Fantrax Dynasty Baseball, which is obviously the Dynasty podcast that we do. We'll record that after this episode. Tons of prospecty goodness, although we talk about major league players from time to time as well. But on today's show, we've got a lot to talk about. We've got some closers moving around, punching things, taking off their pants. It's a wild, wild world out there this week. We're also going to do, in our feature segment, we're going to talk about buy low players and some sell highs as well as we approach the middle of the season. Of course, round out the show with everybody's favorite segment, the waiver wire. Oh, yeah.
There's some Pat Benatar.
Rocking.
Quality.
The question is who's better, Pat Benatar or the woman from Blondie? Debbie.
Harry.
Harry.
Debbie Harry?
Yeah. Yeah.
Harry. I prefer Harry Debbie.
That's a totally different debate for a whole other day.
She works at Walmart down the street.
You want to get a Harry Walmart Star credit card with that one? You just have to apply on the little touch screen there. I get a 5% commission.
Did you find everything you're looking for there, Marv? Did you find all your needs? I'd have to say out of the two that you originally asked, so I'd have to say Pat Benatar, even though they both are very good, though.
I agree. I'm a brunette guy, so I'll go all about Pat Benatar.
Interesting. I hear blondes have more fun, but that's, you know, it's just what I hear in the streets. I have no real experience with that. So I'm going to have to go with Harry Blonde, whatever her name was.
That's her name. That's, you got it.
Oh, for the love of God. Let's go on to some news, shall we? The Royals have traded Kelvin Herrera to the Nationals to build a super pen for in exchange for Blake Perkins, Kelvin Gutierrez, and Johan Smorell, which is a very fun name. The prospects, we can kind of skip over their lower-level guys like Gutierrez. He's a corner infielder without much power. Perkins, no more for his defense. And Morrell, this is like a 17-year-old pitching prospect. Those guys definitely work out every single time, so we can kind of skip over them. But Ron, since you know, we'll give Van a little bit of time to amp up to the show since he's dealing with such pain right now, we'll kick this one out to you first.
Oh, it's okay. Closing? I've taken a ton of methamphetamine, so no okay. big deal.
Hey, so have I. So let's do this.
Man, where's mine?
All I've do they got is have, heroin. I was just saying, what kind of drugs like are rampant in North Dakota? Missouri's known for meth.
Yeah, no, I think per capita, North Dakota would probably give Missouri a run for its money because that is also what we are known for drug-wise.
Interesting. Well, here's a fun fact. In California, the code name for meth is 417, which is the area code for most of Missouri. In fact, it's my phone's area code, as you guys may well know.
Wow, I've got lots of hoes in that area code.
Faux show.
And different area codes, too.
Correct. Other area codes as well. What area code is Kansas City?
Okay, this is a stretch already.
You're asking me what area code can't.
Actually, Kansas City is a 7. I know that because I have some friends that gets like 701 or something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah, I want the
no
zip
one
code
cares.
To Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri.
Aren't you demanding?
But first, I want to know who is going to close for the Royals, Ron.
Okay, see, that's too much stuff you're throwing at me. You're having me look up area codes, zip codes. You're talking about all these ladies you know in different area codes.
He is a mailman. You know? He has to know these numbers.
Do you really know all those numbers?
No, God, no. From across the country, no. Like, I know the surrounding 4 states, but that's it. Or 3 states, I guess.
Okay, so Royals, you know, and one of the things about Kelvin Herrera before we move on to who's going to close now too, Kelvin Herrera is one of my favorite relievers for the past few years. And it seems like he's always been kind of a cheap source of saves. You know, he kind of gets forgotten about because he's not on a very good team. And he was a guy that you can plug in there. I don't really know of what's left over in this scenario, anything worth even looking at. I mean, the guy that immediately I look at is Brandon Marr. You know, when you look at the different sites, it kind of varies what they have listed there. I guess he would be the guy I would go with first, but it's yet again, it's going to be one of these other bullpens that I think that is going to be a topic of discussion for us just about every week from here on out, like our White Sox and our Rangers from last year. So I guess if I had to give a name right now, it'd probably be Brandon Moorer, but I'm not real optimistic on any of them here that it has listed.
I'm not really either. Now, that said, this is the point of season where if you're low in saves, you probably need to be doing what you can chase the saves. So a couple of names to look at were Brandon Marr, Tim Hill's there, but I just don't like him. Something about him I just don't have any interest in. But Kevin McCarthy's kind of the guy I'm looking at. He had a late game lead with the Royals on Monday, and I think McCarthy pitched what would be an important inning. So I don't know. I think he ends up getting the job. As far as his numbers, I actually don't even remember off the top of my head. I'm going to pull him up as we speak because he's been pretty solid this year, if I remember
correctly.
I think
the important thing to take away is that you just announced that you support McCarthyism.
That's exactly what I'm going for. And those who know my political stance understand that that is exactly what I would go for. Kevin McCarthy, 3.86 ERA, FIP and XFIP, think he's right around there, 3.5. Problem is, he isn't striking anyone out, which I do remember. But this is a Royals team that isn't washed with talent, particularly in the bullpen, so why not? Brandon Moore, a couple of years ago, last year, I think, when he was pitching with the Padres, he was having that season that was so bizarre because his ERA was like 9.5, but FIP, XFIP, Sierra, everything else, the strikeout weight, the walk weight, everything else said he should have been a better pitcher. And then when he got traded over to the Royals, he was just bad. So I don't know. I just, something about him I don't trust. I could foresee him getting the opportunity, but I think I'll take my chances and, you know, throw a little bit of a bid out there on Kevin McCarthy and see what happens.
You just turned into like Bugs Bunny or something there for a second. You said not only strikeout weight, but also walk weight.
Did I really? Nice.
You did.
It's all the medication that I'm on. Oh, I mean meth. That's what it is.
Right.
That's why I can't wait.
Wascoe strike outs.
I actually picked up Kevin McCarthy in a couple of leagues, I guess, just because I was desperate and I had Herrera myself in a league. And so, yeah, looking to fill that hole. Unfortunately, McCarthy, not the greatest, you know, target, like you said, Ben, without the strikeout. So not too exciting, but hey, saves is saves. And if you're desperate, he is who I would plant my flag with. Also, I have a long track record of hating Brandon Marr with a sizable passion. So
remember when he was going to be like Keith Law said he was going to be rookie of the year for the Mariners that year. And
a lot of
nothing
people
happened. I mean, I'm not calling out Keith Law. I like him, but it's a lot of people thought he was going to be a good pitcher and he was not and is not.
I've never recovered from this Dynasty Points League that I was in. I was so excited to roll him out and he got me like, I don't remember, like his first three starts were like negative 50 points or something obscene. And ever since then, I've just sworn him off. And guess what? He's not been good since. So good on me. I was reaching for this phrase that I can never remember. Bully to me or whatever that phrase is. We figured that out a couple weeks ago. Oh, let's see. More closer fun. We've got Hunter Strickland decided to break his stupid hand. So, Van, we'll kick this one back to you. Have you ever broken your hand punching a wall?
Not punching a wall, no. Punching other things or doing stupid things, sure, I've broken my hand. I break a lot of things. Let's just get that out there. But, no,
seeing that.
I have a temper. I certainly had a worse temper when I was younger and had, you know, young person testosterone flowing through me. But I never, ever got so angry that I would punch a wall so hard that I would break my hand. I think that's – there's clearly some mental issues at play here if you're someone who does that. So
we've seen, like, anger issues from Strickland before.
Oh, yeah, the Harper stuff.
Yeah, he held onto that grudge for like 3 years or whatever just so he could throw it at Bryce Harper.
So it's clear he needs not only medical help to heal his hand, but he needs some mental health help, and I hope he gets it. But yeah, I guess he's just kind of an idiot, so it's really dumb that he did that. Now, the shocking thing to me was that the manager, Bruce Bochy, has already come out and said that he's going to have Sam Dyson close, so which is fine. Sam Dyson's okay. He's not great, but for 6 to 8 weeks, he should be able to hold the job and not have any trouble. But I thought, you know, it's been long enough. I figured they'd finally go ahead and stick Melanson in there. But the reason they haven't is because they're not confident Melanson can go back-to-back with any regularity. So there are a couple things I'm going to take away from this. Number one, Dyson's the closer, so if he's out there in your league, go ahead and pick him up because you'll get some decent – you get a couple saves. The Giants aren't good, but when they do win, they win by a low margin. And then number two, I don't think that it's that they're afraid of Melanson or think he can't pitch because he's actually been all right since he came back. It's just that I think they really want to take their time and ramp him up because there's, I think, another 2 years on that deal. So it kind of affirms in my mind that he's probably still the closer next year just because he's that closer with a capital C. He's got the big contract. He's been able to do it. So I'm still kind of in on Melanson for the future, and I'm not going to pay a lot for him. I would do it because he's cheap now. But for now, it's Sam Dyson all the way.
And as you look down through the bullpen numbers here, this is kind of the antithesis of what we talked about with these bullpens in the past few weeks. They actually have a lot of solid options in that pen as far as guys with high K per nines, low ERAs, low whips, you know, guys that I'm looking at. I agree, Van, with the assumption for Melanson being the guy for next year since he has signed to the big contract. And they did come out and say Sam Dyson was the guy. So I guess the first guy you got to jump after is Dyson. But after that, I'm kind of big on the combination of Tony Watson and Will Smith when you look at their numbers across the board. Now, I will say I think that they might leave Watson in that setup role. Will Smith is a guy they haven't called on as much. He's only appeared in 21 games as compared to Tony Watson's 34. So he might be a guy they could put in there. Like I said, he's got a K per 9 over 12. He's got an ERA under 1, a whip of 0.70. So it's a good thing this team has a good bullpen because their starting five is hot garbage, including Mad Bum. Since he's come back, he's not been so good either. So I guess in order, I'd go Dyson and then maybe Smith and then maybe Watson as the third guy on that list.
So what you're saying is that even though we're currently living in the Willennium, it's still not going to be Will Smith right away?
No, not right away.
Shame.
Yeah. You have to wait a little bit longer.
Well, at least we'll have those Dominican women with cinnamon tans.
That's probably my favorite line I've ever said ever, which is why I put it in the intro.
Right. I have nothing more to add to that. It's pretty clearly Dyson, so he's in all formats. Add if you need yourself some saves. Brandon Morrow, however, has gone on the disabled list in Chicago. He apparently threw out his back taking off his pants, which has happened to all of us. I forgot who we're on already. Ron, who's closing in the interim in Chicago?
I mean, I guess you got to go with Steve Cishek. From what I've seen, that's kind of the favorite name to hop on. But if past experience is anything, you know, Steve Cishek is the guy that when he gets this job, he's done this in Miami. He's done it. I think he did it in Seattle as well, where he gets handed this closer job and he's okay for maybe 3, 4, 5 saves. And then all of a sudden he turns into Fernando Rodney 2.0. And he gets really shaky, and he might get a save, and then you might have that ERA up over 4, up over 5. He might blow a few saves in there. So he's a guy that everybody's talking about. Me personally, if I have to pick a guy in this pen, I'm going to go with Pedro Strop because the K per 9 is a little bit lower. ERA is a little – so that's not as positive of a thing, but the ERA is a little bit lower. The whip is a little bit lower. I just feel like he's had a better overall season. He's been very consistent this year. But I think Cishek will be the guy that gets the first crack because he has a little bit more closer experience, albeit some shaky closer experience. As we were talking about before, if he was healthy, Carl Edwards would be the guy that I'd be jumping on in hope of him landing some saves. But as of right now, I think Pedro Strop would be the guy that I'd be targeting.
I pretty much echo what you're saying. However, looking a little harder at the numbers, I can see that Steve Cishek has actually been pretty good. He's got that just series of closer numbers where he's striking out 10 batters an inning, but he's also walking 4 batters an inning. But no one seems to care when they have a closer. They're like, no, I walk as many as you want. No one cares, but which is stupid. But the ERA is at 201. FIP is at 291. So clearly there's been some success here. I think the more I think about it, Cishek does end up being the guy for me. And maybe I'm going to target him a little harder than I initially was maybe 10 minutes ago when we were first discussing this. But I do like Pedro Strop as well. Strikeouts are actually down a little bit, but the walks are at a really decent rate, and he's got a 1.76 ERA. But we've got that, he's been a closer tag with Steve Cishek. So I think I'm now going to go ahead and put my eggs in that basket. I think I'll go Cishek until Brandon Morrow comes back.
Yeah, at least you're getting good ratios, good strikeouts in any case here. But yeah, I guess I would roll with Cishek by the seashore just because of the name, which is fun. But it doesn't look at this point like a lengthy absence either way. So you're probably just looking more at like daily leagues and nabbing a couple of saves here and there either way. So I don't think you should be investing a huge amount of fab in either of these guys. But let's see. We've got one more bit of news here before we move on to our feature segment. And Ben, we're going to throw this one to you first. Rougned Odor was benched after a raucous night out with Yohandir Mendez, who was subsequently sent to AAA. And Odor has just been god-awful. Like even last year when he was a below replacement level player overall, at least he was providing you with some pop and speed, but he has not been doing that to this point this season. So what do you think? Is he completely worthless? Is he washed or is he a buy low?
He's 24. So I will put that out as a modifier and say that there's plenty of time for him to change. But in my opinion, as of right now, he's done. I don't want anything to do with him. I absolutely do not want him on my fantasy team. I wouldn't want him on my baseball team, my real baseball team, because – for a number of reasons. He's been just atrocious. One home run and one steal this year. I know he's been hurt. He's hitting .217. Last year, he at least had the home runs and the steals, even though he constantly gets caught stealing because he's bad at it. By the way, that hasn't changed. One stolen base and five caught stealings this year. So he's clearly never, ever going to be a good base runner. And you've echoed that.
Why are they letting him run?
It's stupid. I don't get it. But he's also, and I got in a bit of a debate with someone in our Facebook group about this. He is a dick. I mean, everything you look at points to him being a dick. He takes those hard slides. He says stupid things. He got in the Bautista fight. There's this whole incident here with him, you know, out partying the night before a game. It's just there's a lot of stuff adding up to show that he is does not have a good head on his shoulders. He just has an attitude. He has an arrogance, and I do not like him for that. However, I really shouldn't use that necessarily to impact my opinion of him. I should be affected by his performance. But the problem with this does is that tells me that he's got, you know, a bad makeup. So maybe he doesn't put the work in that he needs to do. Maybe he's a guy that I'm struggling hitting and the coach says, hey, go to the hitting cages, and he won't do it because he's too confident in his own abilities. Now get out of it. It's just a lot of stuff. Oh, and the one I wanted to bring up too, when his girlfriend gave birth, he proudly proclaimed that, I'm not going to take the paternity leave. I need to be here for my teammates. A, you're on a team that's not going anywhere. B, your child is being born. Go be with them for 3 days. He's just a complete and total douchebag, and I want nothing to do with him.
Yeah, I second a lot of that. You know, he talked about being there for his teammates, but he's also getting in fights or whatever the multiple player incident is, and he's not there for his teammates. So that you know, it's a lot of times when you draft for fantasy, you don't necessarily look at a lot of those things. But for me, for some reason, he's a guy that factors in for me as well. And you know, you draft guys hoping that they're going to stay injury free and be in your lineup. But also when you have to draft these guys, or you're looking at these guys that are head cases, they're not going to be in your lineup either. And so I know you're not spending an ultra high pick on him. I know his stock is pretty low right now. So there's not a lot of risk here, but it's just a risk that I don't need to take because I don't feel like that middle infield has really been all that terrible this year. I mean, you've been able to, you know, a couple guys with the breakouts the last couple of years, Scooter Jeanette's a guy that comes to mind in the middle infield that wasn't ultra expensive heading into this year, even after the season he had last year.
And he's the best player ever now.
Apparently so. But he's an example of a guy that you can add or you can put in place of him. I mean, he's hitting, you know, Odor's hitting .227. He's got a .305 OBP. You know, I mean, and he gets this label as being a threat for 25 homers, 20 steals, whatever. But you can't do that if you're not on the field, and especially if you're a head case, because it seems to me guys like this too, he's not going to be probably a favorite in the clubhouse. He's not going to be a team guy. And so if you're not in the good graces with your manager, you're probably not going to start every day. And so that affects us in fantasy. So it's a situation I don't want. I wasn't a big guy, big on him coming into the season, and I'm not big on him now. Even if he is ultra cheap, I don't want anything to do with him either.
Well, I do echo the sentiments about his character. I would say that he does have some pretty massive home run regression coming in the positive sense of things. He's doing a lot of the same things he did last year when he was terrible, except even last year he hit 30 bombs. And this year he's actually – there's something magical about me putting a guy in the rundown because he hit his second home run tonight. That seems to happen a lot. But – so looking at his batted ball profile, he's actually got a 39% hard contact rate. That's the highest of his career. He's pulling the ball a crap load. He's putting the ball in the air all the time. He's still got a pop-up issue, so like that's going to continue to kill his BABIP. He's always had that. But, he should be hitting – his home run per fly ball right now is 2.3%, and his career rate is 13.2%. Even the last couple of years, 16%. So he's got a lot of positive home run regression coming. But that said, he's striking out more than ever. You're not going to get much batting average from him. I think last year's numbers are really the top of the mountain from what you can expect at the end of the season. I don't even think he's getting, you know, 14, 15 steals the last 2 years. I don't see him maybe even reaching double digits at this point. And granted, he has missed some time. He's only played 45 games. But so I actually do think that if you're in a deeper league, he is a buy low. So don't expect a lot of batting average. But if you just need some pop, he might not be a bad guy to go after just because he's not going to cost you anything at all. So moving on to our feature segment, We're gonna start off with some buy low guys. So who do you guys want to start off with? Roball, are you you jacked up, primed and ready to go? Some buy lows.
Roball is definitely jacked. We have to. We already know that. That's been established.
I've had some coffee. I'm lubed up. Let's do this.
All right, go for it.
Okay, so first guy that I'm putting on here, it's a guy that I don't own necessarily anywhere because I'm not willing to pay the price for him in most drafts just because of the way my team has shaken out heading into 2018, and that's Gary Sanchez. And Gary Sanchez is a guy that I hadn't really thought a whole lot about except for in the past week I heard somebody was talking about him. I think I was actually listening to the Rays-Yankees game last weekend. I think it was last weekend they played them. And they were talking – the Yankees was the feed that I could get, and they were talking about how low his BABIP was and how I think it was like the lowest of batters that qualified. He's a guy that when it going into the season was head and shoulders ranked as the number one catcher. And so when we kind of dive into those stats, kind of like what I alluded to before was, you know, at the time the BABIP I think was like 198 when they were talking about him on the radio. And I don't think that's necessarily an indicator of the type of hitter that he is. Now, last year, the season that he had in 122 games, had the 304 BABIP, hit 278, had 33 bombs. And that's kind of what, you know, put him over the top as far as the elite status, at least for fantasy purposes, at catcher. And when you look at him as a real life player, definitely not elite defensively. I don't know if he ends up sticking at catcher in the long term. I think they really want him to work out because his bat's going to be in the lineup. But wouldn't shock me if they end up putting him at a combination of first base, maybe DH, and trying to figure out something with all the different bats in there. That's one of the things too that kind of clouds the situation, is that because they do have so many, even though it is the Yankees that we all love to hate, they do have a lot of talented bats in that lineup. But he's a guy that I think you might be able to get a little bit of a discount on because I don't think the BABIP now is at 203. He hit a homer this past week. He does have 13 on the year. And so the pop is still there, which is kind of what you get him for. I mean, I'm not going after Gary Sanchez thinking that he's going to be a 300 hitter, but I do expect a little bit more than the 194 that he's going to get. But he plays in a great lineup. Another thing that's kind of affected him too is some of these nagging injuries. It seems like he's had a lot of dings here and there so far in 2018. So he's a guy that I've actually inquired about in a couple of leagues. But the problem I'm running
probably still recovering from that baseball to the sack in the playoffs last year.
that could be it. That could be affecting the BABIP. I don't know. The problem I'm running into him in leagues though is people, you know, that paid the price in the draft. They've kind of stuck with him through thick and thin, and they're not always willing to give him up just yet. So you're going to have to work quick because I think the numbers are going to tick up a little bit. You know, they gave him, I think it was like 5 days off in a row about a week and a half ago to try to kind of get him healthy. And so he's a guy that I'm targeting. Hopefully I can add in a couple of places. But, you know, once again, not a guy that I'm probably going to draft unless his value drops a little bit after this season.
Well, one thing I want to point out here, first about Gary Sanchez, second about this whole concept. I don't know if you saw this, but Sanchez had a StatCast fact come out the other day. He hit a ball 121 miles per hour off the bat, which I believe is a record like that. Yeah. And it was what happened with that ball? It was caught by the fielder because it was right at him. So that's just a good indication of Gary Sanchez's year. He hits the ball hard. They do shift him a lot for a right-handed hitter, and that will impact him overall, which also, by the way, side note, I think is really what's killing Bryce Harper. He's not trying to beat the shift. He is hitting the ball hard, but they're shifting him so hard that that average is just going to be that low. But that's a whole different topic. And secondly, Jeff Zimmerman on the Launch Angle podcast, which I also do, pointed this out to me, and he's ultimately far smarter than I could ever be. He said that there's a psychological condition with fantasy players where if you took Gary Sanchez in the 30th overall pick, the second round, whatever it may be, you are invested in that player as a person. Mm-hmm. So you are less likely to want to cut bait or move on from him than a player that you picked up off waivers, which you paid very little for, or a player that you drafted, you know, 300th overall, something like that. You just don't feel like you've invested much in that player. So even if they're performing better than, say, Gary Sanchez, or it's clear that they need to be traded, you know, the scenarios could be the same as talent-wise as the players are. You're still more likely to get rid of that player if you didn't pay the premium price for it. Now, that's not necessarily a good thing. So always try and think of the psychological aspect of fantasy baseball when you're at that point, because you should be doing what's best for your team. And like Nate said, and like you said, like Rougned Odor, you know, we really shouldn't consider the personal lives aspect of it if we're trying to win a fantasy baseball league, unless you have a reason to point out why it should impact it. But for the most part, try to work a little more smartly, I guess would be my short answer there.
Well, let me follow that up too by, you know, prefacing it as well. You know, I don't think you're going to get him for pennies on the dollar either. I don't think the discount is going to be huge, but I think it's going to be – it's obviously going to be more than what it would be if he were – had the same counting stats and were hitting 280 with a 330 OBP or something. So, I mean, I don't think you're going to go out and try to get him for nothing. So don't go shooting these lowball offers out there for him, because, like you said, Van, that's a good point. You spent that pick in him, and like I said too, you know, the guys I've talked to that I've tried to get him off of, that's kind of their train of thought, that they've stuck with him at this point. They've invested in him that amount, and so it is going to be a little bit tougher. But, you know, I think – I guess the reason I put him on here is if there's a time to go after him to get him, it would be right now, because absolutely, I think the numbers are going to tick up. But it may not be at a huge discount, but it'll be at a discount nonetheless.
Indeed. All right. So for my first player, I'm going to bring out to you, it's going to be a shock to the longtime listeners, because I was pretty down on him in the preseason.
Jordy Mercer.
And no one would be shocked if I was like, yeah, buy Jordy Mercer, the Warhammer. But no, in the preseason, I talked about how I didn't like him, but it was basically just based on his pick location. I thought it was too high. I thought what he brings doesn't equal that, et cetera. And that name is Rafael Devers, of the third baseman for the Boston Red Sox. He was 88th overall in the preseason, and that was kind of absurd. I just didn't think that was a really smart place to have a 21-year-old who we really had a small sample size for what they did. Well, so far this year, he just has not been good. He's hitting... I just lost the numbers, 230 something or other. The OBP is under 300. He has 11 home runs, which is on pace for about 24, which is okay, but that's not a 30 homer power bat, which is really important in this day and age. But the biggest thing I want to point out here is that he's 21 years old. This is a kid. I know we're seeing Juan Soto destroy the baseball as a 5-year-old or whatever, but not all players are created equal. So I thought the hype was a little too high with Devers, but I think right now I've seen a lot of people talk about, can I cut Devers? Can I blah, blah, blah? And I think you're absurd, because I think his talent level is so high that he has enough value that he's worth hanging on to, particularly if you have a bench and somebody else who's a little better. But I also think he's performing a little bit better. Last year he hit 284, 338, 482, and that's kind of, I won't say a ceiling, but I think that's kind of what you can aim for. And if he has a little bit of luck this season, then that number should go up a bit. This year, he's actually improved his hard contact percent. He's also managed to increase his Z-swing percentage, which is basically his ability to swing at balls in the zone and make contact with them, which for the most part is a good trend. More balls in play means more opportunities for hits, which means a higher batting average. So that's definitely a thing to look for him. I think he could get that batting average up to at least in the 250 territory by the time the season's over. But I think career-wise, he could be a 300 hitter, but maybe this year he could hit 270 the rest of the way. And if he hits 270 the rest of the way and hits those 24 to 30 home runs, then that's pretty valuable. And he is stealing a couple bases, though I don't think you can really count on that. But I do like him right now for the fact that people are just bailing on him in droves.
Yeah, I was watching the Twins are playing the Red Sox in a series, actually, right now.
But you see that home run ball? Is that what you're talking about? Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
He murdered
because
that.
And that sort of really encapsulates like both the positives and the negatives of what he's doing right now, because that, you know, as a left-handed hitter, that pitch was on the far side of the plate. And so, like, he shouldn't even be reaching for those because his reach rate is really high. He swings at too many pitches out of the zone. But what he can do with those balls was incredible, because he pulled that ball for a home run in target field, and as a lefty, that's no small feat. And just what he was able to do with that pitch was just incredible. So that kind of keeps in mind exactly, you know, what kind of player you're dealing with here, especially in the long run. So, you know, especially for Dynasty League players, do not give up on Devers, that's for sure. So my first buy low guy is going to be Nick Pivetta. And he's, let's see, I actually want to pull up his ERA minus FIP right now because he's been one of the least fortunate pitchers in all of the baseball. He is fifth on the ERA minus FIP leaderboard with a 0.94 difference between his 4.08 ERA and his 3.15 FIP. And that can be a little bit misleading at times, that stat. It's just kind of a fun thing to look at. But everything has been really great under the hood. K per nine, 10.66, only walking 2.5 batters per nine. You know, not allowing a lot of hard contact either. 29% is really good. So, you know, the arsenal is there. He's getting tons of swings and misses, and just everything is there for a much better second half. And it just seems like people aren't fully buying in with Pivetta. You know, because he was kind of one of those pop-up guys, and with the 4+ ERA, he just doesn't have a lot of respect right now, even with the K per nine. So I think that he's a good one to go after.
One thing I do want to say about Pivetta is that I like him, and I agree with you entirely. I think he's a buy low person. But I think his ceiling is capped by the fact that that guy just gives up home runs in droves. And it's not just the ballpark. He just gives up a ton of home runs everywhere. He's a guy that's going to give up a home run a game. And that's not great in this day and age. But for whatever reason, I think that's just going to cap his level. So I don't think you should expect an ace, but I think he's going to be a pretty good pitcher. I think people still need to realize that he's going to be a very nice addition to any staff.
Yeah, he's improved on that at least from last year, because last year was horrible. It's only 1.02 home runs per nine so far this year, but he does have some fly ball tendencies, and that will come to bite you from time to time in Citizens Bank Park for sure. So yeah, that I do agree with that for sure. So Ron, who is your number two?
Number two for me is a guy that when I look at his numbers across the board, there's things that indicate I think his season could go either way. I think it could get much better, or I think it could really head south. And I'm going to elect to go with the fact that I think it is going to get a little bit better. And that's Jake Arrieta. And surprisingly, because, you know, you think about Jake Arrieta, it seems like he's had a really nice season up to this point. And across the stat line here, it's not terrible. But one of the things that stands out to me, first of all, when you're looking at it, is his K per nine is way down. It's only a 6.15, because he did have a start today, and it does count as a quality start, but it still was really nothing to write home about. He gave up a couple homers, 3 runs in 6 innings, struck out 5. So the K per nine was a little bit higher today. Not a terrible start, but not a great start either. Now, I'm not saying that Jake Arrieta is going to be Cy Young Jake Arrieta again, because I do think those days are behind him, but I do think he is better than what he's showing now. One of the things as well, as I was looking at kind of where he's ranked as far as the starting pitchers in 2018, and he's in Fantrax, he's the 65th ranked guy. And there's a lot of guys that I'm looking at a couple of my leagues that are free agents that are out there on waivers that are ranked higher than him that I don't necessarily think I would trust as far as Jake Arrieta. When you look at a couple other things to look at, he's only stranded 64% of base runners, so that's hurt him a little bit. But like I said, the K per nine is way down. And his last 4 or 5 starts before today, he's been pretty bad as well. So he's a little bit of a downturn. And so that's another reason why I kind of put him on this list, is I think he could, you know, that when if you get an owner, especially that has that, that recency bias in their head, you know, before today, his last few starts, he gave up 4 runs, 4 runs, and 5 runs. So he's had a few hiccups in the road. Especially one, you know, he gave up 5 runs to the Giants, and we don't think of them as being quite the offensive powerhouse. The other two were against Milwaukee, so, you know, they're a little bit better offensively. But I just think that he's got the offense behind him, so if you're in a league that counts wins, he definitely is going to get the run support. I think they can score him some runs, but there's just a couple things he's got to improve upon. Like I said, the K per nine, I think it will go up a little bit. He's never been a huge K per nine guy. He usually hovers around 8. I don't think it's too out of the question that he can kind of get back to that point, but he's just going to have to strand the guys that he gets on base. It's that simple. That's the main thing that sticks out to me. But I think if you like, you know, kind of like with Gary Sanchez, I think if you go after Jake Arrieta, I think you could get him at a pretty solid discount, and I think it's worth the risk that he could help you out down the stretch.
And you know, he's one of those guys that I think people are getting so out on him that I think even in a dynasty league, he's worth, you know, maybe trying to pick up, because he's only 32. Now, that's not young by any means, but he's got 3-4 years, I think, of solid performance. And I think the 3.33 ERA he has right now is fine. If he does that the rest of these next 3-4 years, then you'd live with it, right?
Yeah. Oh, I think so. I think that's about what you can expect out of him. Like I said, I don't think he's going to be the Cy Young guy that's going to have the minuscule ERA. But, you know, for a guy that you're getting midway through the season that you're looking to, you know, bolster your rotation a little bit, that's a perfect number. And another thing, too, as I look here real quick to throw in there, I'd like to see the walks come down a little bit. He's averaging almost 3 walks per 9. So if he could lower that maybe by about 1, get that closer to 2, I think that would help him out as well.
I will just interject and say that I'm on the complete opposite side of that. If I was I would gladly let you take him if I was selling. I would be all over having someone take him off my hands, because his, you know, like you said, he's just not striking out anybody anymore, and his Sierra is 4.36, like a full run over his ERA. Every one of his ERA indicators is much higher than his actual surface ERA, and I don't know if that strand rate is going up. If he, you know, with a 6.04 K per nine, it's a hell of a lot harder to strand those base runners, those guys that you're walking, if you're not striking anybody out. And with the whiff rate, 6.8% swinging strike rate, that has to be one of the lowest in all of baseball. So I just personally have no interest in Jake Arrieta moving forward.
Well, XFIP and Sierra definitely gave me a little bit of pause. Like I said, you know, before, it could go either way. And so I'm going with my gut and saying it's going to be more good than it is bad. But yeah, you're right. There's a few indicators out there that make it a little bit scary, too.
Your protein filled gut, which we're all very proud of. moving on, my next buy low guy is I just blanked. What's his name? Josh Bell. And guess what? Not the one that plays for Mexico, the one that plays for the Pittsburgh Pirates. He struggled a bit this year.
I prefer the one in Mexico.
Do you? Well, let me read you his triple slash line so far. 243, 325, 376. He only has 4 home runs and 292 plate appearances, which is kind of bad. And in fact, we had an episode in the preseason where we were discussing him and one of our special guests, and you guys were talking about how his power gains last year, which ended up being, I think, at 26 and 620 plate appearances, seemed like they could be sustainable, blah, blah, blah. Our guest was a little higher on you guys on him. You guys were a little higher than I was on him. Well, guess what? Turns out I was right in that regard, because he sure doesn't hit for power. A couple things here that shows me that there actually is a lot of room for improvement is weighted on base percentage is actually 308, which the league average is roughly about 310. So if you're thinking he's having an abysmal year, he kind of is, but he also kind of isn't. Like, he's still providing average value. Now, there are a couple of other numbers that kind of point towards the fact that maybe there's some room for improvement. He slashes the ball pretty much all over the field. He's got a 35% pull percentage, 31% center percentage, and 32% oppo percentage. So this is a guy who, you know, basically a shift won't help anyone against him. And while that may not help for home runs, it does lend credence to the fact that it could help for batting average, because now there's less opportunity for 4 guys to stand in one spot, and he's probably going to hit it that direction. So there's a little bit of a gain that could be had in the batting average. He is walking 11% of the time, which he tends to do, so he's continuing to do that. So if the batting average jumps 30, even 40 points, then OBP is going to be 360, 370, which is immensely valuable, particularly if you're in an OBP league. As far as the power goes, his home run to fly ball rate is only 5.8%, which is atrociously low. It's his career average is buoyed by last year's 19.1%. But his career average is 13.9%. And so if I could make the argument that it should be closer to 10, 11, 12%, that's still several more home runs. But he's also driving in runs. He's scoring runs. The runs scored and RBI totals are actually decent. So he's a guy that I think is struggling, but not struggling as much as his owners may perceive. So I think the cost is going to come way down. And if you're in the market for a corner infielder that's going to be consistent and could potentially provide you with some nice value, but, you know, maybe not 130 home runs or something or other, then look at Josh Bell. I just think there's enough room here to improve, and the cost is going to be so low that he's a guy to target.
All right. And my second guy is going to be a Bregmania, baby. It's Alex Bregman. In fact, I put my money where my mouth is, because I just traded for him in the Fantrax Staff League, which I am dominating in. But I sent away, I needed some power. I've got lots of pitching. I've got lots of speed as well. So I sent away Jonathan Villar and Eduardo Rodriguez and got back Alex Bregman. And tonight he rewarded me with a home run. He's been quite good recently. So the buy low window may be closing very quickly if it's not already closed. But hey, I was still able to do it, so maybe you can too. But his, I mean, his numbers are just, they should be much better than they are. Like 282 BABIP right now, 268 average. He's got 10 bombs and 6 steals, so he is contributing solidly there. But that average should be much higher, 40% hard contact rate. He's doing a pretty good job of spraying the ball everywhere. He's just not, he's not just totally pull happy, hitting a bunch of line drives. And his, I mean, his plate discipline is elite. Like his chase rate is only 20%. That's got to be, I don't have the leaderboard up, but I mean, that's got to be like top 30 in the league. Not, you know, swinging and missing at anything. 4.5% whiff rate is all, elite contact at 88%. So there's just really not much to like here. He's going to get on base a ton and steal more bases, I think, even over the second half. Score a bunch of runs in RBI in that nearly unbeatable Astros lineup. So, yeah, all over Alex Bregman if you can get him.
You know, I want to point out that, well, obviously, we are known throughout a lot of prospect circles or areas that talk about younger players and everything and baseball players in general. And I was completely shocked, and I mentioned this to you via text, that people are down on Bregman. I don't understand it. I think he's still an elite-level talent. All the numbers say that he really should be. The only thing that I'm looking at his slash line right now that I'm not okay with is the batting average. I think even just having 10 home runs and 6 steals right now means he's, if he continues at this pace, he's a 2015 guy, which is fine. That's actually pretty good, particularly with a decent slash line, right?
Yeah, and I think the power is going to emerge even more as the season goes on, and that batting average is going to come way up. Like I said, 282 BABIP, that could easily be 320.
Absolutely. You know?
I think he's an easy 300 hitter. He's walking more than he's striking out. So, you know, with that elite contact, and he's making good hard contact, too, all over the place, I could easily see a 300, even like a 320 or 330 batting average over the second half.
Yeah, and everything you're saying, I completely agree with, and mostly my point here is that I never even would have thought to attempt to buy low on him because I figured people were still really happy with him. But you're absolutely right. People, for whatever reason, are disappointed. And I think this is the time that you go hardcore after him. Pick him up while you can because it's only going to go up from here.
Well, the only thing I can figure with him, because I wrote about him at Fantastics the other night, because I think he went 3-for-5 with a homer. And, you know, the other night we were texting back and forth and he walked off against my Rays as well. So he's had a pretty good week. But I think the only people that are down on him are the people that have these unrealistic sky high expectations of him, which I think he does have an extremely high ceiling. But at the same time, like you said, Van, there's nothing wrong with what he's doing now. And if you kind of draft him as that, I don't see where you have any room to be down on him at all. But yeah, it could be a guy to take advantage of for sure.
All right, so go ahead with our last guy before we take a break.
Okay, so my last guy here, once again, another one that, you know, there's metrics that could kind of make this go either way for me, and it's kind of uncharacteristic as far as pitchers, you know, that I try to target, because he's definitely not a strikeout guy. And we talked about him in the preseason as just being kind of a safe guy in the middle of your rotation, and it's Michael Fulmer. Michael Fulmer's a guy that, you know, like I said, the K per nine is actually up from last year to a whopping 7.36. So not necessarily a guy that's going to be high strikeouts. However, he did strike out 9 in his start today, looked fairly decent in his start today. So allowed 3 earned and 5 in the third inning. So that the ERA a little bit high on that side, but I was looking at the strikeouts more than anything. 9 and a little over 5 innings for him is kind of out of character. But he is stranding 70% of runners. Like to see that go up a little bit, but that's still not bad. Like to see him walk a few less as well. His walk his walks per 9 is up a full point from last season to 3.12. But once again, a guy that I think you can get for ultra cheap, and I like him more so in dynasty formats. If you can get him, he is only 25. But the main argument I have for Michael Fulmer, and I'm a big proponent of this, and I've talked about it on both shows, is I think when you get these guys that are used to being in this losing culture and just everything kind of seems down on the team, you know, Detroit's not headed anywhere. Miggy's out for the year. Just not a lot going right in Detroit. I think that they kind of get wrapped up in that. I think that kind of affects the mental state of some of these guys. And so he's a guy that I look to possibly get dealt before the deadline. And I think that would help him out quite a bit. I think that would be something that would work in his favor if he could be put in a rotation, the middle of a rotation, in a better better situation, more positive situation on a team that's headed somewhere. So like I said, this is more of a guy that I'd be looking at. I don't know necessarily yearly if the numbers are going to tick up enough, but I still think he's got enough left in the tank that I think he could be a little bit better of a strikeout pitcher than he is. But as far as dynasty formats, I think he's a guy that you might want to target.
Yeah, and for my next guy, I'll just go quickly since we are running a little long. Kyle Seager of the Mariners. I was joking about him with you guys earlier in the day because I was being given offers for him that were dumb. But basically, he's doing what he always does. He hits for power. He struggles a little bit in the first half. But the walks are down. The batting average is quite a bit down. And the slugging is down just because of it. But there are a lot of reasons to think he could get better. He's only 30. He's one of the most consistent players in baseball when it comes to some of this stuff. And there's just something amiss about the way it's going. His hard contact is actually up, and we're seeing a lot of that with a lot of these guys that are struggling. And I think there's just a lot of room for improvement. And I think he's a guy that a lot of owners are finally thinking, well, I guess this is the beginning of the end. But for me, he's too young for that. If he were 2-3 years older, then I would agree. But I still think he's got another year or two of, you know, 25 plus home runs and a 260, 250 batting average. So I expect that going forward. And I think you can get him for a lot cheaper than that value will provide.
And my last guy is going to be a dude, actually, for me at the beginning of the season is Delano DeShields, who missed some time. You know, with some injury. Oh yeah, that's right. It was was it hamstring or something like that? I thought he was going to be out for a long time. He actually came back sooner than I expected. But in 54 games, he's got himself 15 steals. You're not going to get a lot of power with him, but he's hitting only 229, and that I believe will come up, you know, a good 20 to 30 points. And he's more of an on base guy anyway. Always draws double digit walks. And he's actually striking out even less this year than last year. Of course, in my write-up, I mentioned how in the second half his play discipline improved a lot. And I guess I haven't dug into as far as a comparison there, as far as if he maintained quite all those gains. But anyway, he should be hitting for a higher average. And especially, like I said, in on-base league, he's going to be a lot better there. Like the other day, he scored 4 runs and stole 2 bases. That's the kind of game that you're going to get every once in a while from him, and that's what you're getting him for, is those two categories primarily. It's the steals and the run score. He's going to score a lot of runs up at the top of that lineup and steal you a boatload of bases. So I think he's a real cheap, good way to cheaply work your way up those stolen base standings in your Roto League. So with that, let's go ahead and take a break out. It seems like we've been talking a long time. I gotta chug a beer here. Let's take a break.
It's a nice day for a
nasty
wedding. It's a nice day to start again.
All right, welcome back to the Nasty Cast, and we are moving on to sell high players. We completed our buy low guys before the break. So, Ron, let's kick it back to you. We're going to go a little bit quicker through these, but start us off. Who you got as your first sell high?
My first sell high, and let me preface this real quick by saying a lot of times when I'm drafting or I'm at in the end of my draft or I'm looking at waivers, I'm not only getting these guys because I want to throw a dart and maybe get something that's going to help my team, but I also want to maybe get a guy that out of nowhere could potentially produce, and I could send him on for maybe, you know, one of these guys on our other list, you know, that we could maybe get at a good price. And so first guy I've got up here is Yengervis Solarte, and he's a guy that I liked heading into last season, so I think I was a little bit ahead of the curve there, I was a year ahead, I guess. But I liked him going into last year, and he was okay considering where you got him. He was hurt for a little of the season, but this year he's been on fire. I think he's leading the Blue Jays in homers, which I don't think anybody saw that coming with the guys that they have. He's got 15 homers on the season. Numbers across the board are pretty decent. OBP is a little bit lower, but I think he's a guy that's playing over his head a little bit right now, and he's a guy that you might be able to get a decent return for. The multi-position eligibility that he has mostly helps as well.
Yeah, and so my number one guy, and I'll preface this one as well, in saying that I think this guy's a pretty damn good baseball player, but I also think that he's done it enough now that people think it's going to be the norm, and even if it may be the norm, I think there's enough hype that people might overpay for him, and that's Scooter Gennett. He has been an just unbelievably good baseball player. I picked him up at the beginning of May in a dynasty league, and he's done nothing but crush. Currently, he's hitting 337, 373, 534, has 12 homers. He's just been insane. And obviously we saw last year with the 27 homers, the 295 average, the four homer game, that clearly he has elevated himself to a new level. And I do believe that that new level is somewhat legit. I don't think he's a 340 hitter, but I think if he hits 295 like he did last year, I can get behind that. I think the power is right around last year's, you know, 25 home run level, maybe 30 if he gets the 650 plate appearances. And I think that's certainly valuable. But because he's been so good this last month, I think you can sell him for something that you may need a little more and get some really good value in return. So this is a sell high, but not a traditional sell high in that I don't think he's going to fall off a map. I just think he's going to come down slightly and still be pretty good.
Maybe you could trade in that scooter for a shaggy dog van.
If only. And then you could drive it across country and then trade it for a different scooter.
Be careful, though, because you can get 70 miles to the gallon on that hog.
Yeah.
So
also, do you have any parakeets lying around? Because I've got some advice.
Pretty bird.
So my first sell high is going to be a Michael Wacha. And this kind of sucks because, of course, as soon as I put him down, he left to start with I think that said an oblique injury along the crawl on my television, which I am watching on mute. So you might have missed your window by the time this is released. But he was a buy low for me for weeks and weeks. If you read any of my stuff over on Razzball, all my top 100 stuff. And like every single week, somebody would be commenting like, why so low on Wacha? Why so low on Wacha? And he is just such a huge regression candidate in my eyes. I don't know why people like him so much. Like, his walk rate is bad, 3.79. His strikeout rate is bad at 7.7. His ERA after his blow up start from his last, he finally gave up 8 runs in 4 innings or something like that, which got his ERA up to 3.24. So somehow his ERA had been just sterling. But just nothing really supports it. His line drive rate is 29%. That's actually the second highest line drive rate amongst pitchers. So it's not like he's inducing soft contact. Brent Suter at 30% is the only one who has allowed more line drives so far this year. And his hard contact, if I can find it here, 43%. That's got to be one of the highest ranks among qualified starters. I don't know how his feelings towards Monks, if he likes him or not, but he's not, you know, I mentioned the strikeouts. He's not getting any whiffs. He's not getting any chases out of the zone. I see this all falling apart. So not a huge fan of Wacha. I'd be selling him hard. Back to you, Ron.
I don't think there's anybody that has anything bad to say about Monks. And if you do, shame on you.
I like it when they get set on fire.
What is that a reference to?
A monk? Isn't that what you just said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The monks, they would set themselves on fire in protest. I don't really like that. I was being sarcastic. If any of our listeners out there are like...
That's a cover of a Rage Against the Machine album.
It is, too. Yeah, yeah. Yes, but if any of our listeners out there are like, I can't listen to this show, that one guy likes self-emulating monks. Like, no, that's not the case. I'm being sarcastic.
Okay. All right, so I don't have any other way to segue from that other than saying my second guy is not a monk. He has not set himself on fire. He is playing pretty hot right now, so I guess that kind of works as a segue. Matt Kemp. Matt Kemp is playing absolutely out of his face right now, and I don't know, when you look at his stat line across the board here, I don't know if he can keep all this up. I mean, it's just insane how high everything is compared to last year. 384 BABIP, 327 average, 364 OBP. He's already got 12 homers. I heard a thing about, you know, the whole thing around this is he finally, at age 33, after making all this money, decided to pay more attention to his conditioning and nutrition, and that's what did this year. So that's kind of a head scratcher to me. I don't think that a lot of people gave a lot for Matt Kemp late in drafts, if you even drafted him. So he's a guy that I think that if you need something, especially maybe in a dynasty, send him on his way, because I don't know if this is sustainable for the entire season at age 33 for Matt Kemp.
I had Kemp on my list, too, and I completely agree. Another guy I'm going to list, which you guys may argue with me, a lot of people are going to argue with me, I don't care, it's Kyle Schwarber. I don't believe it. I don't believe what he's doing. I think the 241 average is a bit of a stretch. I just don't think he's much more than a 210 hitter like he was last year. I know he hit 246 in that big 2015 season as well. 13 homers and 246 plate appearances is pretty solid. That puts him on pace for roughly 30 or so, kind of like he did last year. I just don't like him. I just don't think he's that good of a hitter. He does walk, which is nice, but I think he's more of a a poor man's Joey Gallo style hitter. I just don't think the average is going to stay. I don't think his power is as good as Gallo's, but I do think he can walk a little bit. He has lowered his strikeout rate some, so there's some hope there. But it's just a guy that I feel like is performing well, and maybe it's because, you know, he's in the best shape of his life or whatever. But I think he's still a fat kid at heart, and I think those numbers kind of drop, and I just don't foresee him being a very consistent option.
Yeah, I'll wholesale disagree with that for sure. Because, I mean, if I don't know, if there was a gift that was out there in the preseason that was all about, you know, it was the hype on Kyle Schwarber. But it was just more than just the belt line being much smaller. It was his swing side by side from last year to this year. And it was incredible how much quicker that swing was. And he's cut his swing and strike rate down heartily. 12.2% is what it was last year when he was terrible. It's down to 9.8%, which is just fine in this day and age, especially for a power hitter. He's got the highest contact of his career, 75.4%. And like you said, he just he's got real good control of the strike zone. So the walks will be there too. You know, and that plate discipline feeds into the power a little bit. So I'm on board with the Schwarber.
26% home run for fly ball rate, which he's done in his career. But I still, anytime anybody has that, I go, come on. I just don't think that's really that sustainable. Hard contact is way up, so that's nice. But he's pulling the ball 45% of the time. As we've seen with Bryce Harper, with enough shifts and enough defensive alignments, that's going to absolutely kill a batting average. So I don't know. I'm just out. I get it if you like him, but it's just not a guy I'm going to invest in.
Well, I'm sick of your shifts.
You're full of shifts.
Yeah, very shifty. So my guy is going to be Nick Markakis, who I am selling. We talked about him in the waiver wire several weeks ago. I believe in everything that he's doing except for the power. And that's really what's giving him a lot of his value. So if anybody thinks that all of a sudden he's, you know, he's got 8 home runs now, so whatever pace, that would be 25 home runs or something like that. I don't think he gets anywhere close to that. I would be surprised if he got more than 15 or 16. So if you can sell high on the Nick Markakis, then I would do that in a hurry.
All right, my last guy is another Braves outfielder, and this one's again a guy that I liked heading into the season. We've talked about him before. That's Ender Inciarte, and it's not to say that I don't like what he's done. I just don't know if he's going to keep it up. When you look at him already having 22 steals or 20 steals, his career high is 22, so he's only two on off the pace for that. I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to keep stealing bases at this rate. And you know, the thing about him is too, if he ends up with 30, and in the preseason, if somebody would have asked you if you would have taken 30. Steals from Ender Inciarte, you would have, you know, loved that all day long. And so that could be maybe what he's on pace for. I think he is going to slow down. He's only hitting 252, so he doesn't do a whole lot else for you offensively. Maybe the run total might be up around what it was last year, where he had 93, but he did also hit 304 last year. But I just don't think that the steals are going to maintain this pace. So if he's a guy that you can get something out of, I would do that, especially if a team is in desperate need of steals, because I think he's going to really slow down.
Very good. And then my last guy I'm going to point out is Jaime Candelario of the Detroit Tigers. He's 24, was never really a super high touted prospect. He has a little bit of prospect status, but I just feel like he's playing a little bit over his head. 10 home runs and 269 plate appearances. I think that's a little more power than he has. The batting average is okay, 247. He is walking 11% of the time, so 349 OBP. So maybe those numbers aren't going to kill you too much. But he just, in essence, feels a little more like, I don't know, a utility player, like a solid utility player than an everyday player. He's going to get the chance to play every day because he plays for the Tigers. But I think if he were, for example, on a much better team, then he would be that utility player who kind of gets, you know, stuck around and provides a little bit of help here and there. But 25.3% strikeout rate's the highest of his career. It's one of the highest of his career. So I think anytime you're striking out that much, that you're going to run into a little bit of trouble. So I think the slugging percentage comes down quite a bit, and he becomes just kind of a guy.
All right. And my last sell high is going to be actually a dude that I had in the preseason, but it's a closer, so it's a little easier to part with him. And that's Shane Green, who has been just awesome. 19 saves so far. He cost you nothing. And that's why I was so interested in him, because he was going to be the closer. And the ERA is only okay at 3.57, but he's got over a 10 K per nine, 2.55 walks per nine. He's been awesome. So the only reason that I'm selling him, because he doesn't have a ton of competition, like breathing down his neck, which was another point in his favor coming into the season. but he is going to get traded at the deadline. There is no way that he finishes as the closer of the Tigers. And I also mentioned that in my dude write up in the preseason. So I do believe that he is going to be a setup man come July. And, you know, when the Tigers are interested in getting a duet or a trio or something of some A-ball prospects in return, like we saw with Kelvin Herrera. So I would be selling Shane Green to somebody who's looking for saves right now. But with that, let's go to our final segment. That is the waiver wire. So, Van, we'll kick this one to you first. Oh, crap. I was going to look up his numbers because he's actually on the mound tonight, but it is Jonathan Loisiga. So what are you thinking about him?
Yeah, it looks like today, I don't know if they're in the middle of the game, but 3 2/3 innings pitched, couple strikeouts or 4 strikeouts, 2 walks, 7.36 ERA. So he gave up some runs. I don't know what to think about him is the short answer. In high A this year, he was elite, a 1.35 ERA, 11.7 K per 9, 0.45 walks per 9. Double A, the strikeouts and walks rate stayed the same, but the ERA ballooned up to about 4.35 because he gave up a couple more home runs. And then so far in the majors this year, he's been pretty good, but the walks are up. So ultimately, I don't know what we're getting. I think we talked about this on one of our shows recently. I think he's in long term a reliever, but right now, if he's a starter and he's succeeding, ride the wave. So I think if you're in need of pitching, absolutely pick him up. Plug him in, see what he can get, play him against the good matchups. I don't even remember who he's playing tonight. But if he's playing, you know, the Rays yeah, or even the Mariners, I'd start him. But, you know, some of these lesser teams that aren't quite slugging teams, sure, start him, see what you can get. More of a spot start guy, but definitely worth a spot to put on your bench if you have the availability.
Yeah, that is definitely a final. The final score is 7-5. So I'm trying to find. I was trying to find his pitch count here and see if there's a reason that he was only in there for 3 1/3 innings. Because I mean, not a great stat line, but I don't know. Huh? Well, I mean, he gave up 6 hits, 3 earned runs. I mean, I guess that would be why he'd get the hook. I don't know if they just didn't want to leave him out there, let him wear it for a while. I don't know, but that's definitely not a confidence boosting outing. Well, for
84 pitches, I guess. So
okay, all right. See, I didn't find the pitch count, so that tells you why right there. The only thing I have to add is, you know, we talked about him on the Fantrax Dynasty podcast, and you know, it gives me a little bit of more confidence in him that the coaching staff in the front office liked his poise in spring training, and they brought him up above a guy like Justice Sheffield, who's having a pretty decent season in AAA. So I think they're, you know, with injury, with just, you know, them trying to kind of figure out who they are at the back end of the rotation, he's going to get opportunities, but he's going to have to produce a little bit better than he did today. He was pretty good the first time out. So, you know, with him being making the jump from AA to the majors at age 23, you're going to have outings like this, but I think he's worth an add in most leagues. I added him in one of my leagues. Didn't work out too well today, but we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, I picked him up in a couple leagues myself this past week. I think he does have some upside. Yeah, he's got some pretty good stuff. But if you look at the minor league track record, there's like nothing there. That's because he's constantly injured. And like you guys mentioned, we did talk about this last week on Fantrax Dynasty Baseball. So we talked about him a little bit more in depth there. But it's just hard, really hard to see him sticking as a starter long term with as much as he's been through. He only tossed, what was it, like 40 or 50 innings last year, maybe not even that. So it's hard to think of him as a long-term solution, but I would be riding the wave. We'll see how he does. You know, Seattle's a tough matchup, so I kind of give him a pass for that. They're one of the better offenses this year. So I'm not too worried about this start, but I will be playing it by ear moving forward. John Hicks is our next guy, Van. Kind of a light-hitting guy, but he does qualify at catcher in a lot of places. So what do you think about the Hicks?
Well, that's the big reason to pick him up. He qualifies at catcher. If he does that in your league, he's definitely worth a pickup because he's going to be playing full-time, whether he catches a little bit here and there or he's at first base because Miguel Cabrera is hurt. So for that very reason, he's worth rostering simply because he's going to get you volume. He's a 280, 324, 440 hitter right now. I think that slugging's a bit misleading. I think he's closer to maybe a 400 slugging hitter, only 6 home runs so far, and I don't think you can expect much more than this pace, but he's going to hit you for average. He's going to get a base and an okay rate, and that means he's probably going to score some runs. This is a bad team, so maybe those numbers will be tampered down just a little bit, but I do like him. So I think if you have a need, if you need a catcher, if you've been struggling since Wellington Castillo went on the DL, great. This is a guy you can pick up and plug in there. Maybe John Ryan Murphy is sucking now, so maybe you want to drop him and pick up John Hicks. There you go.
He'll murder you. I would be careful what you say about John Ryan Murphy.
That is true. He will hunt you down and wear a mask and chase you throughout the neighborhood. But if you feel like you've got enough traps or, you know, you're the cute white girl who will survive the movie, then great. You're good to go.
Which you don't qualify for. So
speak for yourself.
You haven't seen him in heels.
That's right. That's a good point.
You saw my muscle picture the other day, so.
I did. Well, you in heels is definitely on my bucket list, that's for sure. I don't have a whole lot to add, but what I will say is if you're looking at him in first base, look elsewhere because you've got to be able to find something that's going to hit you for a little bit more power. But if you can't put him in catcher, like you said, Van, if you have injuries there, if you have, you know, Castillo got suspended, he's going to help you in some stat categories that catchers usually don't help you in. And from what's going to be left on your waiver wire as far as catchers, I don't think that he's going to keep up the power pace, but I think he definitely can help you in average and OBP a little bit and not kill you like some of the other guys that you're going to find out there. So. Catcher, yes. First base, no.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're getting him to fill. I mean, catcher has been such just a cluster this year that you will gladly add John Hicks, especially in two catcher formats, pretty much of all league depths. So a little bit more interesting of a guy here, though. Domingo Germán. I'll give you his June numbers because that's why everybody is salivating over him right now. He's got a 3.86 ERA in June, 25 and two-thirds innings pitch, a 10.87 K per nine, and a walks per nine of just 1.4. So, Ron, what do you think about the Domingo Germán?
I think he's a guy that I'm going to try to add in a couple of yearly formats. He's looking really, really solid recently, and I think he's one of the things too with La Saiga we talked about as well, and I think kind of threw this out there before, they're still trying to figure out the back end of their rotation. And so he looked good in 2017, pitched 60 innings, or pitched 14 innings. I'm looking at his 2018 numbers. In 14 innings, he had a 3.1 ERA, 11 strikeouts per nine. The walks were a little high. The walks are still a little on a tad on the high side this year. Strand rate's a little low for me, and the walks are a little bit high as well, but he is averaging over 10 Ks per nine. So overall, I like his stuff. I like what he brings. Obviously, he's got that offense behind him, so he's definitely a guy that I think is worth an add. And like you said, Nate, especially recently, he's looked a lot better than he did when he first got called up with the lower ERA. So you look at XFIP. XFIP likes him a lot too at 3.52. So I think he's a guy I'm going to go after.
I think it's important to kind of look at the whole package here too. I know he's been better lately, but we've got a 60 inning sample so far this season, and it's not pretty. Strikeouts are great. The walks are actually pretty reasonable, 3.13 walks per nine, but the ERA is at 4.77. And he is simply a fly ball pitcher. He only has a 38.7% ground ball rate. And if you're doing that, if you're giving that many fly balls up in Yankee Stadium, you're going to give up an insane amount of home runs. And right now it's only at 1.5 home runs per nine, which seems low considering how low his ground ball percentage is. So I think there's also room for him to start giving up even more home runs. So I'm pretty wary. I think he's doing really well right now. So I think he's worth a pickup, worth a plug if maybe he's at an away game against a lesser offense. But I'm not going to play him in Yankee Stadium. I'm not going to play him at Boston or any of these tiny parks. But otherwise, maybe take a chance on him. But I would not hesitate to cut him if you start seeing him struggle again.
Would you start him in Central Park?
It's a pretty big park. So I guess if he's at the, you know, if you're at a long ways, you start him at one end and then let him, the hitters try and hit it long ways, then sure, that's fine. Also, he'd get murdered at night.
That's not good.
Or at least mugs.
Mugged, yeah.
Always losing baseballs in bushes in that park. I mean, in that time frame in June that I gave, still 42% hard contact there. If you're looking for a little bit of a wet blanket, I will say that at the very least, he's a flyer in all formats right now. Just in case he has found something to really enhance that walk rate, because that's always been a bit of a problem for him is that walk rate. And I've never loved the delivery. He's had a lot of injuries. The command has never really been there. So he's always been a reliever to me in the long run, and he hasn't changed my mind yet. But like I said, just in case he has actually turned a corner, you got to pick him up, like, just in case, because I missed on Luis Severino too. So in case that happens, if lightning does strike twice, you want to at least have a share or two. So our last guy here before we round out the show, Anibal Sanchez. tried and true, the veteran. Ron, what do you think about Anibal Sanchez?
I mean, you know, he's a guy that I wrote about a couple weeks ago on Fantastics, and he's a guy that I hadn't paid any attention to for I don't know how many years because he's kind of bounced around the league a little bit. And, you know, he's in that Atlanta rotation, and it's something and must be something in the water in Atlanta that makes these pitchers, you know, look amazing. Didn't look too amazing today, though. In the outing that he had, four earned runs in five innings pitched. Seems like all these guys that we're talking about pitched today, which is weird. He's been striking out about eight guys per nine innings. And so, I mean, I guess if you're looking for a guy that you can fill in and maybe plug in and maybe get a good start for here and there, but it's a guy that I don't trust. FIP and XFIP don't trust him. They're both over four. There's no way he's going to strand 85% of runners the rest of the season as he is now. And so he's a guy I'm going to leave on waivers, but I mean, I guess you could do a lot worse, but if he's hot, I guess you could plug him in, maybe get a start here or there, but I don't think I'm in on Anibal Sanchez.
Hang on, let me get my pen ready. What the f*** is Anibal Sanchez doing? this is not real. I don't want anything to do with him. FIP, XFIP, Sierra, all the secondary numbers, they all pretty much point to the fact that this is a little questionable. He's got a 90.3% left on base rate. If you're stranding 90% of the runners that get on, it's just that's an anomaly. That isn't skill taking
bully
over.
To you.
So no, I'm sorry. I'm out. No thanks.
Do you remember when Anibal Sanchez was a Minnesota Twin for like 3 days earlier this year?
I do. And do you remember when they cut him because he's bad? No, because they signed someone else, didn't they?
Right. I think that's when they got Odorizzi, and they didn't have Lance Lynn at that point either. So they ended up getting two guys after that, if I recall correctly.
Still the right move.
Right, yeah.
See, I remember Anibal Sanchez as a Marlin when he was actually somewhat good. Decent way back in the day, yeah.
Plus, Anibal is just a sweet name.
True.
But the only thing that I could see sticking out is his cutter so far this year, 20% cutter usage so far. It's a pitch that gets absolutely no whiffs, but 60% ground balls. And by pitch value, 4.94. That's actually the best in baseball on a cutter with at least 30 innings among starters. So there's that. And he's been limiting hard contact as well, 23%. So I actually streamed him today against the Jays just because I was like, oh, well, what the hell? I got a spot, and the Jays don't really scare me. Of course, he took the loss. It was a pretty ugly start. At least he got 7 Ks, I guess, but not good. So, yeah, I'm definitely not buying this in the long run. But that's it, boys. So, Ben, what do you got coming out this week? Anything? You're just going to be, like, icing your leg?
I'll be icing that knee pretty heavy. Actually, I just released my Fantrax article, which ironically is about buy low hitters in redraft leagues. And some of the guys I talked about today are on that list. So go check that out. I think I just saw a note. I missed the Launch Angle podcast recording today because I was in the hospital, which I hate. So that will probably won't do an episode this week. We'll be back next week, I'm sure. Also check out our Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast, which is awesome. Rate and review us on iTunes because it helps us out and we need it. And special shout out to former host Jesse. I just saw he donated on the Patreon, so we really appreciate it, Jesse. Now give us even more money, Jesse.
He's got a lot. He's just rolling in dough. He's like that whatever duck does that. Scrooge McDuck. Is that right?
Yes. You couldn't think of Scrooge McDuck, but yes.
I never really watched that show. Anyway, Rod, what about you?
Yeah, obviously the podcast with you guys here, we'll be doing the Fantrax Dynasty here in a bit. Fantastics coming up. I don't think I have Fantastics again until I want to say next Tuesday. I got a couple days next week. And then been hitting the consistency stuff from the football standpoint with Bob Lung real pretty hard recently. The guide is out. Go get that. Talked about that last week. We posted the show yesterday where we talked a little bit about the FSTA expert draft that went on yesterday, and we talked about a little ADP value, some risers, some fallers, and we talked about a new formula that Bob came up with called X consistency, and we looked at some quarterbacks as far as X consistency as well. So go check that out.
I heard a rumor that X consistency gonna give it to you.
Oh, he gonna give it to you.
Okay, good.
A lot of rap talk on this episode. Kind of weird.
Well, we're gangster. We're mad gangster.
That is true. Very true.
That's how we roll.
So I've got the normal stuff coming out, Fantrax Dynasty. I got my Fire and Ice on Fantrax HQ on Friday. And then over at Razzball, I've got two-star pitchers on Saturday and my top 100 starting pitchers on Sunday. So go check that out. Next week, we'll be back at you with Doug Thorburn. So look forward to that. And until then, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.